So we've celebrated 60 years of David Attenborough on air, 100 years of Technion, and now a rare medal given by the Royal Society of London to the likes of Charles Darwin, Francis Crick and Suzanne Cory. This year's medal, to be presented in November, has just been awarded to Professor Andrew Holmes from the University of Melbourne for his research on solar materials you can print. Yes, print.
Andrew Holmes, congratulations. You must be thrilled.
I'm absolutely over the moon about this, Robin. I still can't believe it's true.
Would you explain what the Royal Medal is?
Well, the Royal Medal was instituted in 1825 by King George IV as one of the prestigious awards of the Royal Society. Two medals were issued, and in 1965 a third one was created by Queen Elizabeth II for applied sciences. The other two were for physical and biological sciences, and they're awarded annually by the Royal Society.
And this is for research you've been doing in Melbourne for quite some time on solar energy and printed material. Now, how does it work?
We are very interested in the modern field of plastic electronics or organic electronic materials. And the discovery goes back to work by Alan MacDiarmid, a wonderful New Zealander, and colleagues discovered that plastics could be made to be conductors. Plastics are polymers. Nobody expected plastics would be anything other than insulators, which we use all the time for stopping ourselves getting electric shocks from cables and so on. And when MacDiarmid and Higa and Shirakawa found that these plastics also could be made to be as good conductors as copper, the whole world got very excited about this new field of organic electronic materials. The bubble burst in that because the materials they discovered weren't as stable as they needed to be for the application. But that led to the discovery that they could also be semiconductors, like silicon, like some of the other traditional semiconductor materials. And it was that area that we developed. We found, in collaboration with Cambridge physicists, that certain kinds of polymers could give out light when sandwiched between electrodes and electrical bias applied to the electrodes. So the idea is if you can put electrical charge into a plastic and it gives out light, what about turning it round and putting the plastic into light and getting electrical charge out? And that's the area we're working on in Australia now, and we want to print them like the polymer banknote.
Before we get on to that, what does what you've just said have to do with LEDs, those tiny lights that we all know are replacing the conventional ones?
The light that we got out from the polymers is effectively an organic LED or OLED. Now, you can make these from thin films of small organic molecules deposited as thin films, or you can make them, and that was the work that we did, from polymers. So traditional LEDs, like the ones around us here in the studio, winking green and red and now blue, are rather tiny. You can't make them in large sizes. The way you get size is by putting lots of them together, so you get an array. But you can imagine with a plastic, which you could deposit from solvent as a thin film, that you could actually spread a football pitch with this stuff if you were really keen. So the idea of having large area organic and polymer LEDs is the evolution from the traditional and very powerful inorganic LEDs which dominate at the moment. And the first flat panel TV screen has just been announced as a market proposition by both Samsung and LG at the lighting show in Las Vegas.
Wow, this is quite different from the flat screens we've got these days.
They look the same in terms of size. This is 55-inch diagonal, so it's as big as the big ones that we now try to put into our houses. But the difference is that the material that gives out the light is actually the emitting material rather than with the traditional liquid crystal displays that we all have in our houses today, where the light is given out from some backlight and then filtered through a lot of filters to give the colour and the on and off nature.
Now, as for turning it round, how are you getting on with that?
The solar cell story is going really well. When I arrived in Melbourne, we chose that to avoid conflicts of interest with the intellectual property around light-emitting materials, which had been developed in the UK. And that was a motivation for research at the start. But it slowly dawned on me that actually it was my national duty to work on some technology that would harvest light and generate electricity and contribute to the renewable energy market. So I found that there weren't many people working together. And what started it all off was working with CSIRO. We thought we'd try and apply some money from what was called the International Science Linkage Program. which was an excellent program.
Late lamented.
Late lamented. And this is a sort of anecdotal argument of why it's so valuable. This allowed us to get a consortium together with seven Australian partners, so all the Australian partners working unjoined up in this field, with six really top-notch people abroad, and form a consortium called the International Consortium on Organic Solar Cells. And that got us going, and it was that that led eventually to the Victorian group consolidating around CSIRO, Monash, Melbourne, and industrial partners to work on now what's a $15 million project. So there's the multiplier. It was a $6 million and then another $15 million, so at least a 21-fold multiplier. And we are setting ourselves the challenge of printing at least an A4-sized polymer solar cell that will work and that will lead us perhaps to the opportunity of forming a commercialization project and a pilot line. And the idea is to put these on rooftops. The building industry wants building integrated photovoltaic materials so that the roof is also the solar cell.
So the photovoltaics are working very well. We've got the world record, Martin Green, University of New South Wales. But the trouble with that is the photovoltaic ingredients are pretty expensive. How does your system rate compare to that?
One of the things that one learns is that the product in the marketplace will get cheaper and cheaper as it gets larger and larger in scale. And we're now seeing the situation where, particularly from the Chinese manufacturing industry, many of whom were trained by Martin Green in silicon solar industry, the prices are coming down almost to the stage where it's competitive with electricity generated from coal-fired power stations in the grid. We're still at the R&D level. We produce in the lab, as does Martin, to be fair, for his new materials. We produce postage stamp-sized solar cells to test out new materials. But it's very difficult to cost our product at the moment because we don't have it in the market and we don't have the ingredients that are competitive. So that, I think, is a minimum 4 or 5 years away. And the ambition is that if we can print football pitch-sized sheets of solar cells, that we should be able to reduce the cost. But one has to be very careful not to make claims that can't be substantiated.
No, sure. But when you've got these for a household like mine, for a building like this, what do you do with a dirty, great big sheet that can collect solar power? Do you stick it on the wall or where?
Well, the early applications, I think, will be for indoor lichens on the wall inside where you could actually gather some of the light that you've generated by conventional means and recycle it, if you like, as energy. That's a nice application in diffuse sunlight where the materials aren't put to the real test. But the ultimate aim, and that's a dream at the moment, is to have these materials out in large area applications, generating electricity that will provide an alternative source of energy. And the simplest way to start, if one's thinking of roofing applications, would be to print it on polymer and stick the polymer on the roof. And, of course, because it's flexible or semi-flexible, it will be able to follow the roof conformation relatively easily. The technical challenge is to extract the charge from large areas. And even in silicon, that's why the modules have a certain size. There comes a time when the amount of current you need to extract from a module is larger, really, than you can engineer into the module without losing a lot of efficiency. So we'll probably actually learn a lot from the silicon industry in the way in the sizes of the modules that we produce. And they'll probably look very similar in terms of size and shape to the existing silicon modules. But the advantage that might be there is that we could sew these things into fabric. So you would have a low-voltage power pack that you would wear on the back of your jacket or shirt, which might allow you to keep your mobile phone charged. That application's in the marketplace with one of the early pioneers in this field from the United States. They've produced a satchel which has the solar cell just on the side of the satchel.
So your clothes could be a collector as well?
Your clothes could be a collector, and of course they could be an emitter. They could be also giving out some light when you needed at least low voltage lighting.
Any surface, you could actually have the world being a collector of this stuff, and you could, going in 5 or 10 years' time, it really would transform society, getting energy on that scale almost everywhere.
Yes, the calculations are pretty straightforward. It's mind-boggling, but if you had an area of 100 by 100 square kilometres, you would probably at 10% energy conversion efficiency. And the best organic solar cells are just nudging into that in the postage stamp sizes now. But at 10% energy conversion efficiency, you could certainly provide enough power for the United States electricity grid over that area. So it doesn't take long to think that if you could fulfill this dream, you could power the world, at least with electricity, from solar energy. Now, you've got to store it at night, but the main usage is actually during the day. People use electricity mostly during the day because of the intensity of air conditioning, washing machines, refrigerators and so on that they're going on during the day.
We actually covered that in the Science Show with a zinc battery the other day, a PhD student, again from Melbourne. It's very exciting stuff.
Yes, great opportunities.
Beats burning coal, don't you think? Professor Andrew Holmes on the coming revolution in solar, for which he's won the Royal Medal, a rare achievement. He's a CSIRO fellow and a laureate professor of chemistry at the University of Melbourne.